So who's sexier, Leela?
Dave Tennant.
Tennant or Smith?
Tennant.
Yeah.
Smith is there cute. With... Tennant is sexy. Ooh. See? That's how it works.
Mm-hmm. Okay, who's sexier, Nancy? William Hartnell or Patrick Troughton?
Oh, yeah, give me the tough question.
Okay, here's an easier one. Who's sexier, Sylvester McCoy or Colin Baker?
That's horribly mean.
See how lucky you have it, Leela? You've got, like, cute doctors to compare, so.
I know.
Actually, I know Dale's answer. Dale's answer would be Matt Smith in Coat and Tails.
You didn't know my answer at all, because you haven't asked me the question.
Oh, hey Dale. Who's sexier? The Raggedy Doctor or the Dancing Doctor?
Hi, this is Phil Ford, and you're tuned to The Happiness Patrol.
I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am.
Bloody stupid is what you are.
I got married to the widow next door. She's been married 37 times before.
Really? That's
nice. She was only married once.
Okay, something like that.
Once.
Oh, that's right. You've been doing your European history, haven't you?
No, that's just my favorite monarch.
Well, Henry the Eighth. Right.
Yep.
I hear music. Oh, it's Dale. Oh, good. No, I can do my British accent while Dale's not here. Oh, I'm Henry the Eighth. Boy, I am Henry the Eighth. I am. Hello, mate. How you doing there, matey?
Dick Van Dyke of you.
Right. It's very. You know, I used to be compared to Dick Van Dyke by some friends of mine in college.
I think Dale's yelling at you from afar.
Is he?
No, I said my tea's fucking hot.
That's good.
I did the best thing this afternoon, the most amazingly brilliant, calming, soul-cleansing thing.
What was that?
What?
I cleaned the kitchen.
Yay! Ooh, has anybody seen his new Dyson?
No.
Bloody Ooh. Brilliant.
Dale, I'll give you a mo to talk what? About to talk about your Dyson.
Looks like a freaking ray gun. It does. It's a handheld rechargeable Dyson DC16. If you want to look it up on Google, it's bloody brilliant.
It really does look like something straight out of Doctor Who. It's so funny. It's so funny. Oh my god, it's an amazing.
It's also damn powerful.
It needs. I told him it needs like a couple of nuclear stickers. You know, caution nuclear and something or other like that on here. You know, that kind of thing. But he won't.
What did I say to that theory?
He goes, "Fuck that! I'm not putting stickers on my Dyson."
Yes, that's exactly what I said.
Season 5 or season... What would it be?
31.
Yeah.
Season 5. Absolutely season 5, because when Doctor Who finished in 89, Doctor Who finished in 89. Yeah, the fact that they've now brought it back, you know, or brought it back in 2005 is... neither here nor there to me. You know, that for me is not season 28, 29, 30, etc. It's season 5 of new Doctor Who, and I think the two do deserve to be separated, because classic Who is amazing in its own right, but new Who is equally amazing in its own right.
Hey, you know, and speaking of season 5, Michelle, our reporter, Michelle from LA, Michelle H has this little report for us.
Hello, Happiness Patrollers. This is Michelle H., calling in from lovely Southern California. Oh, but Michelle, you might say, this is an episode where everybody's chiming in on what they think about the season as a whole, and the season just ended, but you're in Southern California. You should be, like, a month behind everybody else. How could you possibly have seen the whole season? I'm friends with Tara, and she has a TARDIS. Not that hard to figure out, man. 2 + 2, it's 4. Hey, pay attention. Anyway, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Stephen Moffat for making River Song in the final two episodes of the series, making her into a character that I really, really enjoy watching. Because I was not a fan of the River Song. And when she first showed up in Silence of the Library, I had an open mind about her. I wanted to like her. And, you know, in the first couple of scenes where you see her, she's a real take-charge gal, and I liked her attitude. But as the story went on, her attitude sort of transformed into something I began to dislike. And then when she showed up again, you know, she was, again, I really wanted to change my mind about her. In the first couple of scenes, she was great, and, you know, the shoes and the dress and the you might want to hang on to something, and I really wanted to like her. And then, you know, after a while, it was just kind of, she was all kind of know-it-all and kind of annoying to me. So now she's awesome, and I can say honestly without reservation that I look forward to seeing her again, and I know that we will. She'll probably be all over that Christmas special. And that's a good thing. So thanks, Stephen Moffat. I'm hooray for retroactive character development. Like, that's crazy. Isn't that a crazy thing to say? So, on to the more general things. I wanted to talk about the companions. The first I want to talk about Amy. And I know a bunch of people, well, no, but I know a couple of people who don't like the Amy. The Amy kind of grates on them. And I wasn't sure why. And I think it might have something to do with this. Amy is more like us, the audience, than any other companion has been before. Now, on a previous episode of the Happiness Patrol, they discussed briefly about how the companion is there to sort of be the audience, to represent the audience in the life of the doctor. The doctor has to explain things to the companion out loud, and therefore the audience gets things explained to them. Something new pops up, and the companion says, "What the hell is that?" Because the audience is thinking, "What the hell is that?" So that's the companion's role. And that's great. But they have usually been kind of different from us in some way or another. And Amy is like us more than probably any of us really wants to admit. And if you think about it, she met the doctor at a very early age, and then he went away from her life for a number of years. He made quite an impression on her, as he is wont to do, and she went through the rest of her childhood, you know, barring a couple of unfortunate run-ins with child psychologists, and went about her normal play behavior, and so he became her imaginary friend. So he was both real and her imaginary friend at the same time. And she continued having a relationship with him that he was not there for. She had conversations with him. She developed opinions about him. She had adventures with him that he wasn't there for because he was her imaginary friend. And this might seem like I'm going off topic, but a couple years ago, I was reading an article. A group of people who research such things were doing research into, they were doing brain mapping. And what they discovered was that beloved fictional characters live in the same place in our brain as people we actually know that are either dead or otherwise not present in our life. You know, like, for instance, your Aunt Martha passes away, and you go into a store, and you see an ugly ceramic cat, and you say to yourself, "Oh my God, Aunt Martha would have been all over this ugly ceramic cat. There was nothing Aunt Martha loved better than an ugly ceramic cat. And if she were alive today, I would buy this for her, and I was sure she would have a place of honor for it on her shelf with her ugly ceramic cats, and it would probably get put in the blue section, you know." And when we think about the doctor, we think about him in the same way. The same parts of our brain are lit up when we think about the Doctor as they are when they think about our dearly departed Aunt Martha. So she thinks about him in the same way that we think about him. And when he shows back up, she has a different sort of attitude than other towards him than other companions might have. Her attitude towards him differs from ours because we, many of us, look up to him, and she does not. She doesn't let him impress her. You have to think about it. If you're a little kid and you have an imaginary friend, do you play second fiddle to your imaginary friend? No, you don't. So when she looks at the Doctor, she does not see herself as his sidekick. He's her sidekick. You know, it's just like that scene. She looks at Rory and the Doctor and she says, "I got my boys and I got my box. Life is good." And then she goes into the TARDIS and the Doctor looks at Rory and he's like, "We're not her boys." And Rory says, "Yes, we are." And the Doctor says, "We so are." And he acknowledges that. She will not look up to him in the way that anybody, just about everybody else, does. And I think maybe that's what the people I know who aren't quite so thrilled with Amy, I think that's what they're sensing, and that's what they don't like. I think maybe they don't think she gives him the respect that he deserves because he's the Doctor. Next, I want to talk about Rory. I love Rory. Rory is awesome. If you think about it, Rory's kind of like the Samwise Gamgee of Doctor Who. He really doesn't aspire to, you know, fame and fortune. You know, all he wants is a nice, you know, quiet life in a lovely little village with a woman he loves and have babies and do good work. And that's what he wants. That's what he aspires to. But, and he really kind of struggles with and resists attempts to pull him into things larger than himself. But when he finds himself faced with something larger than himself, he rises to the occasion and he deals with it. Case in point, he comes out of the TARDIS as a kid Hungry Earth, and the kid and his mother think he's a policeman. Does he make any attempt whatsoever to dissuade them of this notion? No. He says, "There's a problem. I should go. We should, you know, the Doctor's going to want to know about this. This might be important." And he goes with them and he investigates. When, you know, when he finds out he's an Auton and he tries to make Amy leave and he ends up having to guard that box. The Doctor says to him, "Try to stay out of trouble." And he says, "I will." And he does. For 2,000 years, he has no problem staying out of trouble. The Doctor is amazed by this. How could anybody stay out of trouble for 2,000 years? But when you're Rory, and your definition of a wonderful, you know, a wonderful life to aspire to is being a doctor in a quaint little village with a woman you love, having a baby, getting bored is not going to make you go out and do something that gets you blown up. So, you know, that, good on you, Rory. Yeah, chalk one up for the little guys. The thing that kind of bothered me about how Rory was handled was the way he kept dying and coming back, which after a while I actually kind of became a little angry about, because Rory's death should be upsetting and emotional, and he died in Amy's Choice and then came back to life. And then almost immediately afterward, he dies in the Hungry Earth and Cold Blood. And we knew he was going to come back at the end because he disappears into the crack. And you're like, well, wherever the other side of that crack is, that's where he's going to be. And then he does come back to life. And then in the finale, we think, again, that he died in the London Blitz, but then he, you know, moments later he shows up as a security guard. And I realize this is supposed to be like a fairy tale, and in fairy tales things happen in threes, but they were entirely too close together. And it really detracted from the emotion that we should have had every time we thought he was dead. In conclusion, I wanted to talk about the Stephen Moffat nugget, as Tara likes to say, the Stephen Moffat nugget of truth that comes, that is the message, I think, the overarching message of the whole season in a way. Things can disappear, but when they are remembered, they can come back. And he keeps trying to stress that to her. And it happens, and it especially happens most dramatically at the very end of the season, when she stands up and she, you know, announces to everybody that I know, you know, she acknowledges that they're sick of hearing about her imaginary friend, but he's real and she remembers him and he's late for her wedding. And she remembers him and he comes back. And if you think about it, that is the story of Doctor Who, the show, because it was around for a very long time and it went away for a number of years, but people remembered it and they, you know, did things to try to keep that memory alive with books and with conventions and podcasts and Big Finish productions. And the show came back. And I think that even more so than something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue, I think that that little Stephen Moffat nugget of truth that things when remembered can be gone, but can be reclaimed. I think that's the most important little Stephen Moffat nugget of truth for the whole season. And this is Michelle H. for the Happiness Patrol in Southern California. And letting you know that happiness will prevail. See ya.
Hey, Leela, guess what?
What?
I think Sherry from Chicago has got a little wrap-up action for us here.
Fantastic. Let's hear it.
All right.
Hey, everybody. This is Sherry calling in from Chicago, Illinois, for the Happiness Patrol and my thoughts on Series 5 of Doctor Who. What can I say? It was brilliant, fantastic, wonderful, fabulous, all those good words. Ooh, happy 4th of July. I don't know if you heard all that. Anyway, yeah, I love the series. I thought it was great. You know, first I was hesitant because I didn't want to see David leave, but I was wrong. Matt Smith was brilliant in the role. Karen Gillan was just adorable. I loved everything about her. Love the new TARDIS. I don't think there was an episode, the entire series, I did not like. So, saying that, I've got nothing bad to say at all. I hope that everybody here has a safe and happy 4th of July. And I will be reporting back to you soon in November after Chicago TARDIS. Take care, everyone, and have a happy, happy day.
All of our reporters put in a lot of great hard work this past season, and none other than our amazing Mr. Andre T., our man in the street in New York City, was able to bring us amazing reports from the special event that the BBC America had there with Matt Smith, Karen Gillan, and Stephen Moffat when they came over to the U.S. and to promote the brand new season of Doctor Who. And, you know, Andre just went above and beyond and got us some great reports and
made it onto Doctor Who Confidential.
And he made it onto Doctor Who Confidential, but he sent in a report for his season recap, and quite honestly, Dale.
Yes.
Well, let's take a listen. Let's take a listen, and you tell me what you think.
Calling the Happiness Patrol. Calling the Happiness Patrol. This is Andre T. in Long Island, New York, and I'm calling with my review of the new series of Doctor Who now that I've finally seen all the episodes. Okay, well, I guess I can hit the high and the low straight out. The high and the low would have to be for me, The Doctor and the Vincent being the high. Definitely the high there. Yeah, great script. Amazing acting. Amazing acting in that. And the low for me would have to be Vampires in Venice, which, quite frankly, just... Well, it was... Yeah, the whole season overall wasn't... Yeah, it was above average, I guess. But Vampires in Venice was the weak sister of them. They went and... Well, they basically just... You know, vampires are popular, let's do a vampire story. Yes, they tied it all in with the crack and, you know, dropping another clue for the Doctor, Rory, and Amy to work out what is going on, what the cracks mean, etc., etc. But it was very generic. You know, the acting was fine, but nothing just reached out and grabbed me. You know, if I had to say, you know, if I had to cut an episode of the series, that would have been the one. You know, the last two episodes were good. I mean, you know, it was nice seeing all the aliens, but the problem with seeing all the aliens, you know, in the Alliance, is that you look and you go, what are they doing there, and what are they doing there? You know, for example, the Blowfish and the Weevils from Torchwood. Now, they were brought in, obviously, because, well, you know, the costumes are made. And apparently I should pay attention and turn my cell phone off. Which, that was a text message. Bugger. Not even an important one. Let's see. You know, where was I? I was talking about the... As I turned the phone off, I was talking about the last two episodes, the Alien Alliance. You know, the Weevils and the Blowfish from Torchwood being there. You know, there was no reason. Yes, I realize there are budgetary issues and whatnot. And quite frankly, it would have been nice to see the original series Cybermen instead of the Cybermen. But, you know, you get what you can take. And, you know, it was, you know, what alien costumes do we have lying around that we can use? You know, well, let's use these and just, you know, just to bulk up the numbers. You know, quite frankly, I know that there's probably some legal reason. I would have much rather have seen a call go out and get a couple of, you know, people that cosplay or something like that to come in with costumes of classic people, because, quite frankly, some of them are goddamn amazing. But, you know, like I said earlier, it's a numbers thing. The first part was nicely done, you know, who's in the Pandorica, who's in the Pandorica. Oh, the Doctor's going into the Pandorica. Which, if you knew, you know, from, you know, leaks and whatnot, what was going to happen in the Big Bang, you kind of expected that. That having been said, it was nicely done. You know, the Big Bang, to bring the Doctor back, you know, the old wedding thing, you know, something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. The build-up to that was kind of nice as well. All in all, you know, digressing a bit. You know, out of 5 stars, I'd definitely give this series, you know, 4, 4.5. I wouldn't give it 5, you know. Like I said, there were some moments, you know, notably, in my opinion, Vampires in Venice. But, yeah, it was a good season. Yeah, Matt Smith shows that he's an amazing Doctor. Unbelievably great. Amy Pond is great. Yeah, sorry, Karen Gillian as Amy Pond is great. Although my wife, you know, basically points out that most of her acting is done with the amount of opening her eyes. It's hard to explain. So this is Andre T on Long Island in New York, signing off and saying, hooray, I finally got my homework done.
Hey, gang, we got a special message from Tanya, who was the winner of our Sam Stone and David Howe Tell Us Publishing contest book giveaway. And she phoned in and left us this great message.
Hello, Happiness Patrol. This is Tanya from Connecticut. And I just wanted to send you a message to say thank you so much for the books. I honestly haven't been this excited about reading a book about vampires in a very long time. And it wasn't until hearing Sam Stone talk about her books in episode 24 and just how passionate she was about the subject that actually made me interested in reading these books. So wanting them has been absolutely fabulous. So thank you again. I love all of you. Thank you to the Happiness Patrol and thank you to Sam Stone from the bottom of my heart. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you. Bye-bye.
When I told you about the time I snuck into the cast and crew screening of Empire Strikes Back.
What?
I told you about that, didn't I?
You need to tell it for the class.
Well, what happened was, this was back before they built Skywalker Ranch, and they used to do their screenings at the North Point Theater down by Fisherman's Wharf. And they just rent out the theater. And a friend of mine had gone on the Saturday, and it was like a sneak preview. And she's, you know, she came back to our science fiction club meeting and said, guess what we just saw? It's like, what? We saw Empire Strikes Back. And we're like, what? And you didn't tell us? And she's, well, I heard them saying they were going to do it again tomorrow. But so maybe you can go down there and see. So we go down on the Sunday, bright and early, and turned out it was a cast and crew screening. And we're just like, oh my God. So we were like, a friend of mine knew the manager of the theater, and the manager said, you know, if it was just me, I'd let you kids in. But, you know, the Lucasfilm people are here, and, you know, their security's in here. And we're like, yeah, okay, fine. So we went, and we were, like, hanging out by the side door so we could hear the soundtrack, because the soundtrack album hadn't even come out yet. So we're like, oh, listen to the soundtrack. Oh, that's so cool. And then the manager comes out, and he says, kids, the security guys went in to watch it. There were like some seats down in front. Do you guys want to go? It's like, yeah. So we snuck in and we had like the worst seats in the house. We were like front row off on the side, you know, but we didn't care. And they hadn't even finished all the special effects yet. And wow. So we watched. Then the lights come up and we find out that it was cast and crew and all their families. So we totally blended in. Especially like somebody's kids, you know? So we were hanging out and I got George Lucas and Mark Hamill to sign my little
your little what?
They had these program sheets they were handing out at cool. the front. I got them both to sign it. And the funny thing was, afterwards we were out in the lobby and a friend of mine went up to Mark Hamill and started talking to him. And he says, you told him that we had snuck in, and he's all like, well, you guys are fans, right? Did you like it? Do you think the fans are really going to like it? Because it's so dark, you know? And we were just like, oh, this is so cool.
How nice is that?
Like, oh, that was my most
history.
That is really cool. That's a cool story.
It
hell
is,
yeah.
I have a picture I took of the little program sheet with their autographs on it. Mark Hamill wrote, love to Nancy from a galaxy far, far away.
Actually write that.
He actually wrote that.
Mark Hamill. Yeah,
that man has just gone down so much, in my opinion, for writing that.
Mark Hamill, fresh off the heels of Corvette Summer.
Yes, it was.
Well, once again, the time has come to say goodbye for another edition of the Happiness Patrol. I certainly hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Happiness Patrol featuring our Happiness Patrol reporters. They chime in every now and then whenever there's something very special in the world of Doctor Who going on in their city. That's Michelle H. from Los Angeles, Andre T. from New York City, Sherry S. all the way from Chicagoland, Illinois, and a very special thanks to Nancy A. From San Francisco, California, for sitting in for Tara as she recuperates and gets better. And speaking of Tara, Dale, Leela, and myself will be back next week for another exciting edition of the Happiness Patrol. Until then, guys, you can always follow us on our blogspot. That's thehappinesspatrol.blogspot.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/thehpatrol. And you know what? You can cover yourself in happiness by going to visiting our Cafe Press site. That's www.cafepress.com, Happiness Patrol. So go check that out. There's lots of t-shirts and stuff like that, and hats and things that you can sport your support for the Happiness Patrol, your favorite Doctor Who podcast. Yes, indeedy. Well, until next week, I'm Lewis B. saying au revoir. I hope I pronounced that correct. Dale, you can always. Dale?
This is Katie Manning saying, enjoy the Happiness Patrol. Yes, it's your happiness that we want. Bye now.
See, that's not a fair question. It's the same man. But I'd like to point out, you see, if you'd asked me the proper question, which is who's sexier, Tennant or Smith, I'll have to say Matt Smith, and because he's also got parts of David Tennant in him. So we know what's been going on. It's not 11 for nothing.
Oh, Lordy.